presents the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Tech Talk, the podcast where we explore the technology of sci-fi. I'm Jeff Sire, and with me today is Mike McPeak.
Hello.
And Julie Keel.
Greetings, everyone.
So today we're going to be doing the short film, The World of Tomorrow. And the IMDb synopsis is A little girl is taken on a mind-bending tour of her distant future. Now, seeing as this is a short film, we have a short synopsis, and that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah.
This thing was kind of like almost performance art. Like, when I got to the end, I'm like, okay, that was kind of neat, but I'm not exactly sure what it was I just saw.
Yeah. It felt to me like an animated PowerPoint, almost like a Prezi. You know, it's like, I want to tell you these things, and it's a monologue type of, which is not the case. It's not a monologue. There are two voices, but it was more of a, I have an idea and I'm trying to get it across, and I think I'm just going to do it this way. And by the way, for those who haven't watched this, it's Stick Figures. It was an interesting way to tell a story and get a message through.
I was kind of fascinated by the vocal acting. Yep. It was sort of mesmerizing, shall we say.
It depicts a little girl.
What is it, a little girl, or is it somebody acting as a little girl?
It depicts a little girl, yeah. Okay. I'm not convinced it was a little girl.
Okay. I never looked this up, so I'll do it now. But I think there's just two voice actors. I think Julia Pott was the little girl.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I don't.
And she is not. She is
there
in her 20s.
Too much to that script to be done by a 3-year-old, you know. So
yeah.
I was pretty convinced it was not a little girl.
Yeah.
But, you know, they pulled it off because, you know, 3-year-olds kind of talk, or six, whatever she was supposed to be, kind of talking non sequiturs. And they had that down pretty good because she just kind of talk about random things. So.
Well, it was a very good voice acting to, you know, pull off a 2 or 3-year-old's voice. I mean, it really did make you think that she was a child, which, you know, it's interesting how you pick up the phone and you can actually tell whether you're talking to a child or an old person, you know. So there is something to the actual sound that makes it sound like a child, and she actually made it sound like a child. So,
right.
Like I say, it was really good acting. But acting.
Yeah.
It was a voice actor. There was no acting. It was all stick figures.
I'm not very knowledgeable about animation, but the style is not overly complex. Like,
nope.
It is stick figures. The backgrounds are very basic, and the coloring is pretty basic, but it goes with the story. I believe it won an award at Sundance.
I think it was an effective way to present the content.
Yes. Yeah, completely.
Yeah, you couldn't have. This reminds me of, what was that one we watched? I can't even remember the name. Where the guy was like a billion years old or whatever, and they were all up at the cabin. And, you know, we had a problem with that being a film because it was really a play. And this is a case where the short animation like this is the proper method of, you know, getting this message across. If you'd have done this as a play, or if you'd have done this as a movie, I suppose somebody could take and rewrite it and take this short thing and turn it into a full-blown movie, but it would be very different. I mean,
would be completely different, yeah.
Yeah, the point of this was to get this concept of, you know, what, bottom line, the girl's taken on a mind-bending tour of her distant future is about people trying not to die by cloning themselves or putting themselves in little boxes, and basically, like, they actually call them, like, the original and like alpha or prime and, you know, double put, what would it be after prime? Anyway, beta, anyway. So about three generations of clones later, came back in time to talk to this little girl, and truly a little girl, to explain all of this cloning stuff and, you know, how it works. And basically, at the end, she planted the seeds of information, a message, so that the little girl would remember as she was growing up to pass on to these other clones. It was kind of like, you know, Terminator, you know.
Yeah.
She came back to talk to Sarah Connor.
Well, but didn't she come back to retrieve a memory, though?
Yeah.
Of her mother. Yes. Well, and because she said that in 6 days, her Earth was going to be destroyed by a meteoroid, I think is what they call it. So I think she wanted to retrieve a memory before she died and just kind of spend the last of her days in happy thoughts or something?
Yeah, you got the impression that these clones really didn't live much. I mean, they talked about this clone being on the moon and falling in love with a rock and then a fuel pump and all this other stuff.
Which that was the funniest line I've heard in ages. Was that I wrote it in the notes? And that was when I fell in love with a fuel pump. That was just for it.
I
don't know why, but I just thought that was hilarious.
I actually thought the one where I fell in love with a rock, it was sparkly, was even funnier. Yeah, it was like what? But yeah, the image or the what was being depicted was the fact that these clones who essentially were living forever, you know, these memories, but it was kind of sad. They were kind of lonely and kind of, you know, I don't know.
Well, and the way she talked, it seemed, you know, sort of, I want to say simplistic or something like that. And they didn't make some mention in there about there was, I can't remember exactly, but basically there was little deterioration, which makes it sound like there was some deterioration in the cloning process.
Right.
And I have to wonder if mental faculties was perhaps one of them, because if you're falling in love with rocks and fuel pumps, I don't know, what does that... And then there was this thing, her third love, whatever that thing was, that she left behind because he was inconsolable.
Right.
It was all kind of weird.
Yeah, it was. But as much as it was weird, and you wonder what the hell you're talking about sometimes, the point of it was to explore the concept of trying to live forever through cloning. I mean, that's the bottom line, I think. You know, when we talk about this being a great format to present information, that was kind of what they were trying to present.
Right. But I think they're also showing the flip side of that obviously, the one that is the most alive is the original, the little girl. Like, she's the one that's spunky and has all the non sequiturs and funny. Like, yeah, like, whereas the you know, third generation clone is just kind of emotionless and, you know, like a more like a robot than a person, right?
Right, yeah. Just, yes. And they actually did talk about robots, too. And I have to admit, I kind of lost track of what was going on during that part.
There was a lot of weird stuff happening, yeah.
Well, like, I found that kind of...
The robots on the moon were just staying in the sunlight, and then they left them alone, and they were just kind of continually going around the moon, staying in the sunlight.
And they were depressed, and they were doing poetry, and all I could think of was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Poor Marvin. He was like, oh, dear. Here we go.
Well, because she had programmed them, because they were solar powered, they had to stay on the sunny side of the moon. So she'd programmed to constantly be in motion and fear the dark, I think is what she said. So basically, she programmed, psychotic tendencies into these robots because, you know, to fear death and to always keep in motion, you know, that sounds maybe not psychotic, but the neuroses, maybe that's the word I'm looking for. But she basically, you know, programmed these computers, these robots to, you know, always fear death. And so, and then it was too expensive to bring them home, so they just left them up there. So they're just, yeah, constantly in motion and writing depressed poetry.
Yeah. So it was, you know, you get done with it. If it was about a 15-minute movie. Well, 16, almost 17-minute movie. And it explored a lot in 17 minutes. It really did. It covered a lot of topics. But you got done with it, and my first inclination was, I need to watch it again, because they packed a bunch into it. There was just a whole lot of, you know, it was cute and it was engaging, but it was like, you know, a drink from a fire hose, I suppose. You know, we were talking about cloning. They were also talking about how memories are from, you know, your point of view. You when you get cloned, the concept was is that the original was impregnated with a clone, which essentially then became, you know, like a perfect copy baby, and then you dropped the memories in, so you basically did, you know, we always talk about this idea that cloning doesn't mean you make an you know, a Xerox copy of yourself. There is this process of growing up that has to occur. And so, you know, what they sound like was going on in this short film was, you know, yeah, you biologically impregnated the original with a clone, but then at some point the memories were implanted in them, so you did have you know, an adult that was, you know, essentially a Xerox copy, but, you know, 20 years later. So it was, that was kind of weird. You know, that was kind of...
Well, then they had this piece of what I would, I guess, call performance art, where this person had taken a clone of himself but hadn't put any memories in it.
Right.
And then just put it in a box, which sounds a little, I don't want to say grotesque, but a little maybe perhaps inhuman, but just put this clone with no memories in the, on display at the museum and just let it age, and after, what did it say, 72 years of age, it finally died. But
right.
And people would come and visit it and talk to it, and which was kind of a, you know, how we, you know, talk about anamorphosizing objects. Well, this was a person with no personality, but people came in and apparently were projecting their own feelings on this non-person, because they would, some people sit down and have lunch with it, some people would come in and talk to it. I don't know, did some people fall in love with it?
Yes.
I can't remember. Yeah. And so it was kind of, you know, what does that say about us falling in love with the body but not the person?
Yeah. And just the whole, you know, You that could bring up all kinds of arguments about slavery and of, you know,
civil rights and human rights.
And I'm just thinking about like mental capability, you know, the treatment of the disabled of some sort, you know, and that kind of debate and discussion. So yeah, there was like, again, this thing covered a bunch of major philosophical, you know, things that you could debate for eternity.
Well, the ideas were simplistic in its presentation, but when you sit there and start thinking about them, you do start to, you know, contemplate all these things. Like, you know, is your clone your property? I mean, can you do with it as you wish and put it on display and let it slowly die for other people to watch? You know, just it boggles the mind when you start thinking about it that way. And what's the, you know, implications for something like that, where, you know, do you own, you know, a clone? Okay, maybe it is of your DNA, but is it you as an individual person? What would its rights be? You know, it's just a lot to think about there.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've talked about it before, but do you guys think that somewhere somebody has cloned a human being?
I mean, taking cells, you know, not in the non-reproductive way, taking cells and growing them into a human being?
Into a full human.
See, I figured that somebody's done it somewhere. Because if they're doing it, if they're cloning your pets and doing it, I bet somebody's done it. Like, if it's to the point where pretty much you can do it in any modern lab, like biology-oriented reproductive lab, I bet somebody's done it.
I was going to say, I'm not 100% certain somebody has done it. I am 100% certain that somebody will do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure somebody will do it.
Yeah.
I just think, like, if there's companies out there that will clone your pets, and they clone stud farm animals now and stuff like that, and it's been, what, like 35 years since they cloned Dolly the sheep? Like, I think it's easy enough. We're to the point where it's pretty straightforward to do it. And really, all it would take was a couple who are, like, you know, reproductive technicians even, who just say, look, why don't we do this? We'll clone you, and you carry this baby to term, and we'll just act like it's our child, and we'll just, you know. Well, I bet somebody's done.
Yeah, the thing that I'm going to assume is going to push somebody over that edge and past that line is grief. It's either going to be grief of, you know, they can't have a baby, or they just lost a baby, or they're losing their parent. I mean, sure. Transcendence was a good example of that in the movie, where, you know, somebody was going to die and it was like, you can't possibly die. We need your memories, and, you know, that kind of thing. So to me, and grief is a subset of love. So, I think it's probably not going to be, you know, fear or power, you know, a power play, power hungry person or whatever. It's going to be grief of some sort that pushes somebody over that line.
Yeah. Like if you were part of a couple and you worked in, like say a fertility clinic, and you had an infant that died, you know, in a accident or whatever, who was a couple years old, you would certainly have the means to be able to do it, and you could probably just, nobody would be the wiser, right?
Yeah, and it's, or, you know, yeah.
All it would take is the right set of circumstances,
yep.
Almost, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, somebody just wants to make a few dollars and lets somebody else into the lab after hours. You know, all kinds of it's
like your first child, say, was was a difficult pregnancy or something like that, and the wife had her tubes tied. The baby was delivered by cesarean, had her tubes tied, so they weren't going to have any other children. And then the child dies, and then they say, okay, well, why don't we just clone the other one and say it's a miracle baby, you know?
Right. Yep. So it was interesting, too, that this little short film also talked about, you know, full-on cloning, like we've been describing, was for the well-off. There was a less advanced technology for those who couldn't afford, apparently, full cloning. Which basically was, you know, dropping your soul, your conscience, your memory, whatever, your brain into a box, and then they would.
I thought that was kind of neat, because like that's essentially the singularity, and most other sci-fi, when they talk about that, they put the singularity as like the pinnacle. That's what we're all heading towards. And in this, it was kind of backwards, where the clone was what the rich people did, and if you couldn't afford the cloning, then you went for. Like the upload sort of singularity.
Right. Yep.
But you had to wonder what that was like, because they said they got a message back from Grandpa saying, God, God, oh God, oh my God, 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 God. It didn't sound like Grandpa was having, you know, a ball of fun in there.
Right, and the amount of – there was some time warp thing going on too, because they said something about they got 1,000 letters from Grandpa in the box in the course of like a week or something, because that was like 4 years to the box. And I'm like, what the hell? And to the, oh God, God, oh God, God, to me is similar to what I heard people, you know, say literally the moment they're dying. So, that it's so much of this short film was wrapped around people trying to avoid dying.
I wonder if that's like, my mother passed away about 10 years ago, and my grandfather and grandmother passed away just shortly before that. Now, my mom was only like 63 at the time, and so if she hadn't had cancer, she would have had, you know, like
30 more years.
A lot, you know, a bunch more years.
Yeah.
But I remember both my grandparents, I remember both of them saying towards the end, like, oh, this has been good. You know, this is time for this to kind of end, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I wonder sometimes when you see stuff like this about everybody just wants to extend their life. I wonder about that sometimes. If you get up to, you know, towards the end of your life, if that is that whole idea that, oh, I want to live forever, maybe that's just for younger people to think that. I think maybe not everybody, but I think a lot of us will get to a point where this has been good. And, you know, the world has changed enough and, you know, it's time for me not to be here anymore.
Yeah, no, you just described my mother. She's going to be 84 this year and she's more than ready to go. I mean, she's just like, yep, nope, anytime, that'd be good. Come on, don't drag this out.
Well, you know, even as I get older and, you know, you get a few more aches and pains and it's a little, takes a little longer to get going in the morning. And you know, right now I don't feel, you know, quite that way. But still, I'm thinking as I get older, there's going to be a point where, yeah, it's fine. You know, I'm okay.
Yeah. And part of that, my mom actually fell this week and hit her head pretty hard on the sidewalk. So, but, so, you know, there's this whole thing about being afraid to do things and essentially being frustrated and pissed off that your body is failing you.
Right.
And I will be there. Oh, holy cow. I'm going to be the most pissed off old person ever because, you know, whatever. But the part of what we deal with, you know, and part of what some of the other movies we've dealt with on this cloning business have been as far as, yeah, trying to replace your failing body because your mind is not failing. You know, your mind's fine, but, you know, your body becomes wobbly and falls over all the time or, you know, that kind of stuff. So if we get to that point where we can, you know, clone bits and pieces of us or regrow things or substitute out, you know, I mean, things like hip replacements and knee replacements are a beginning of that. But, you know, if you can sub out all the old parts, would we want to live forever? And I'm going to argue we still wouldn't want to live forever.
No, I don't think. Yeah. I'm sure, like, you can't say that for everybody because I'm sure there will always be some people, like, if they had the option, they would just continue on and on. But I think for the majority of the bell curve of us would fall under a point, you know, that the majority of us will reach a point when we say, you know, this has been enough sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, if you're the only, well, or one of a fewer, I mean, if it was commonplace, it might be different. But, you know, there's been stories about somebody that was the freak, like that one movie we watched, and he just kind of got tired of, you know, the people around him aging and him not.
Right.
And you watch them, you know, at some point you get tired of dealing with grief and loss.
And change.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean,
like, right now in Canada, they're in the middle of writing a laws that will cover doctor-assisted suicide. Like, about a year ago, the law that was preventing it was struck down, and the Supreme Court gave the government a year to come up with legislation to cover it. So they're in the middle of writing what will become our doctor-assisted suicide. So I just wonder, like, you know, which my personal view on it is I think it's about time. Like, you know, we do it for dogs. We don't do it for people. I just, you know, I think it's a good idea. I understand that there's lots of people that feel differently than me. But I just wonder, 10 years from now, once it's been in for a few years, what things will look like then. I know in places in Europe where they've brought that in, I don't think it doesn't change society dramatically. But I just wonder the effects that it's going to have.
Yeah, it's... There's always a bunch of checks and balances. Well, hell, Canada's been doing that for a long time because the Eskimos, but this is what my mother keeps telling me. She keeps saying, I wish I had been an Eskimo and they'd put me out on an ice floe and that had been the end of it, you know, where they would, if you were too old to chew leather, you were, you know, set out in the cold and that was that. Everybody walked away and that was the end, which is, you know, honestly, fairly humane. Freezing to death is not the worst way to go. But yeah,
I'll take your word for it. So
you actually get pretty damn happy. You know, you get sleepy. Is what happens.
I think the part that leads up to that part where you get sleepy, that's not probably fun.
Yeah, well, you get cold for a while, and then you get warm for a while, and then you get sleepy, and then whatever. So it's the mental anguish that you go through, knowing, you know. But in you talk about mental anguish in Star Trek, goes back to Star Trek. There's the episode with David Ogden Stiers in there where, you know, basically, their culture is to everybody dies at, I can't remember the age, 60 or something. And that's just the way it is. Everybody dies at 60. Doesn't matter if you're in the prime of your health and career. It just, it's done. You know, that's the way. And culturally, you know, everybody had come to accept it, saying, you know, yeah, clear, you know, get out of the way and let other people, you know, develop their careers, and they will take your work and they will expound upon it. And yes, you could have contributed, but, you know, this is our way. At age 60, yeah, you just, you're done. So,
see,
you know,
I always thought that episode of Star Trek was really, really craftily written to kind of point out the silliness of the whole, that whole system, because the whole idea was that that culture had had, this is as I remember it, so this might not be 100%, but I think it's close, that they had had a huge population, you know, problem, and so in order to alleviate it, they brought it, brought in mandatory, you know, death at a certain age. But then years down the road, they got their population under control. They didn't have that anymore, but now it was just kind of entrenched, so it was just something that they continued to do. And I always thought that that was super smart written, because they're essentially, like, whoever wrote that is essentially saying the only reason why we don't, like, as North American society, or you know, they would have been Americans that wrote it, like, that we don't have that is because we just have this tradition of not allowing it. Mm-hmm. Even though now we're in a society where I'm allowed to make decisions for myself that aren't tied to, you know, or reined in by religion, but because we've just never allowed this for a long time, we've gotten to a point where we're not doing it just because we've never done it. Like I said, you know, well, you're allowed to put your dog down, and if your dog is suffering, you're considered a bad dog owner if you don't put your dog down. But the dog can't speak for itself. But if you have a human being who can speak for themselves and says, I want this to end, oh, sorry, dude, got to tough this out. Like, I always thought that was a really, really smart writing, because the more you think about, like, the fact that it's in there as tradition, the more I think that the statement they were making was just kind of, like we said, like, a lot of science fiction is written to kind of hold a mirror up to society and say, oh, look at what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, in the short story, The Rules of Tomorrow, short film, also kind of points that out too. It's not so much the whole, you know, assisted suicide or anything like that, but this whole desire to live forever, you know, whether you're rich or you're poor, and what are the consequences, and what are the, you know, the quality of life for the clones on down the road, and, you know, those types of things. It does kind of. I won't say it paints a grim picture, but it paints a picture that most people are probably going to say, that's not so awesome. You know, it's like, I don't know if I want to have five clones of me that just get, you know, more depressed as time goes on. So,
but I think part of that is, I think it was Mike said, like, it's just, you don't want to change, right? So, like, if somebody from the Renaissance period looked forward and, you know, somehow could see what we had today, it's probably scare the crap out of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with us. Like, oh, you know, when we look into the future, like, the near future and the things that we can see coming down the pipeline, that's probably pretty cool. But if we were able to jump, like, a couple hundred years into the future, there's probably a good chance that it's, you know, it might be fine for them, but it's probably not the kind of world we want to live in.
Oh, another Star Trek episode.
Yeah,
that they did that, where they basically had, I can't remember, they thawed out some frozen folks, and at least one of the, you know, most of them were completely discombobulated. What else did we find? Oh, reading Ultima and Proxima. Wait, right? Yeah. We had that one guy who was frozen 100 years and was always out of place. The same thing in that Star Trek episode. Sure, these people were, you know, thawed out several hundred years later, but, you know, they had no friends, they had no relatives, they didn't know what to do for a living, and was living, you know, making a living even a thing, and, you know, how do you go by, and what about money, and where, you know, there's this whole discombobulation. And sure, maybe some folks could adapt to it, but I'm going to guess for many people that'd just be way too overwhelming, you know. And to what end? To, you know, why? What purpose would, you know, why would you tough it? I mean, at least the one lady, she was trying to connect with her family, or, you know, make some sort of connection with her descendants, actually. But you know, there, some of them, it was just like, there's just nothing here for me. And I'm not all that interested in trying to, you know, make my way in this brave new world.
Well, you the thing is, though, I think part of human nature, though, is to try and live as long as possible. Because, I mean, that's what's gotten us to this point. Because if our ancestors would have just, like, given up out on the prairie or, you know, in the during the Ice Age or whenever, you know, this world that we have might not exist. They could have just, you know, this is too tough. We give up. We quit.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's that kind of thing that's ingrained in us and that keeps us pushing forward to, you know, make all the advances that we do to do all the things that we do because we have this, you know, inborn desire to, you know, perpetuate the species, you know, if you want to put it on that level. And I think, you know, there is this the religious aspect, you know, just not Christianity. I think a lot of religions is to, you know, be fruitful and multiply, to, you know, aspire us to greater things, to things beyond this world. So I think there's this thing that keeps us going that, you know, drives us to do this. You know, and part of it is maybe the uncertainty, you know, the flip side, I guess, of religion is that the uncertainty that if you don't necessarily believe, then you do have this fear about what happens after I die. And so I think that's what drives the fear of death is that we don't have certainty about it. So then we're going to try and live forever because we don't really want the definite answer that we may be right or wrong.
See, the only reason I want to live forever is because I want to know everything. I want to get through my list of to-dos. But, yeah.
Well, you see, that's the thing, you know, and I guess, you know, it does come down to personal belief because I guess my belief is that, you know, when I die, you know, I will, you know, go, you know, I mean, I'm not going to try to turn this into a religious discussion, but basically I'm going to transcend to the next level, let's just put it that way, where I will, you know, understand all this stuff. I will get to see everything. And I guess that's what, you know, I try to experience as much here on Earth as I can. But, you know, like I say, I do have this hope and desire that, you know, upon my death, I will get to step back and go, oh, it makes sense now.
You know, that's something this film does not address at all. It has this underlying current of everybody is afraid to die because they want to be cloned or they want to be put in this box or whatever. But nobody, there is nothing in it that addresses any sort of, you know, like what are you trying to avoid by doing that?
Well, and some of them are so desperate to avoid death that they ended up dying because they were trying to, teleport back in time and they ended up in... they miscalculated, and I don't quite understand what, you know, the position of the Earth has to do with this exactly. But they ended up in space, and so they were coming down to Earth as shooting stars, which was a little gruesome, maybe.
Right,
I have to wonder how well, you know, bodies would burn up compared to an asteroid, but I guess they would. But, you know, but they were so desperate to live that they were dying trying.
And that's pretty common in the world, so
yeah.
Well, the little girls, I thought that was another funny thing. Like, oh, and she's telling her what's going on, and they're just, oh, look at the pretty lights,
right? That was one of the things that was kind of brilliant about this film is making one of them a little girl, because
the absolute innocence that she is approaching everything with,
right? Yep, and so it's
it's absolute innocence versus stark reality.
Yeah, and I think even if you'd have made the child older, I mean, we're talking, you know, she was like circle, triangle, ooh, look at the pretty colors. I mean, we're talking a very young child. And I think anything older would start to have those philosophical discussions about why, or what do you mean by this, or whatever. And, you know, it became an effective way to kind of have that conversation or present that point of view without getting too deep. Too heavy.
Going down the philosophical rat hole, basically.
Yeah. I mean, this wasn't – the way it was presented, it wasn't necessary – it wasn't meant to be a debate or a – exposition of all the details of, you know, all these different things, but it was more of this, you know, kind of, and then it did, even though it got really deep and there were parts of it that were really strange and kind of depressing. It never did get really dark either. I mean, it was always, I think because of the child, it was always yes. kind of lighthearted. If it had been an older, it would have been two adults talking to each other, it would have been really kind of heavy.
Or even if it was a monologue without the counterpoint of the little girl there. Yeah, it would be, like I say, rather dark, kind of heavy, and rather depressing. But I think, you know, they could put the serious stuff out there, and then the little girl would bring you back from the edge with her, you know, innocence and smile and laughter and triangle color, you know, whatever. So, yeah, it provided a balance there, but it did provide a way for them to get the ideas out there for you to think about without having, you know, having discussion in the movie. The discussion part is up to you to have, not the movie, like we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, for 16 or 17 minutes, it's a pretty good way to spend 17 minutes. And I would suggest that you might want to plan on 34 because about the time you finish it the first time around, you pretty much want to go back and watch it the second and go, what now? How did that work? So.
Well, then they also had I'm still kind of trying to wrap my mind around that. But basically, we have the internet, but they got the outer net. Yeah, outer net. Yeah, which is basically sort of the transcendence thing where we've become part of the internet or the neural network. What did they describe it as? See, reveals. Oh no, I can't quite find it here. But yeah, but basically, yeah, we've gone to the next step where the internet just connects us together. But this, the outer net connects us together mentally, I guess, more so than physically, which is kind of an interesting idea. That would this mean then that we share our thoughts? And because the girl could sit there and go, she could think colors and they would appear. So, you know, is this like?
Well, yeah.
Virtual reality.
Right. That's what I was thinking. It was like virtual reality also tied into, you know, your brain waves. So, yeah, it was, you know, it's amazing actually how much was portrayed or conveyed in 17 minutes of stick figures. I mean, truly, it's really kind of, I can see why it would win awards. I mean, it really did get a lot across. And as far as, you know, like production quality, we often talk about, you know, like film making and whatever here, and Jeff, I think you mentioned it. Mm-hmm. It's very relatively easy. I mean, I could, if somebody had this script, writing the script's always the hardest part, but if somebody had the script and says, I want to just do this as stick figures and here's some ideas on backgrounds or whatever, it would take a skilled person probably, you know, 17 minutes, and a couple weeks, several weeks, 3-4 weeks maybe to put this all together. You know, depending on how they did it. But it's, you know, that's relatively short compared to, you know, trying to put together a 90-minute movie that takes, you know, a year and a half with massive budgets and, you know, tons of people involved. I mean, I could see, I mean, literally, look at the credits. There's two actors and, you know, a director or something. So, you know, and they're using all kinds of, like, public domain stuff as well. So, I mean, we're talking about doing this on the cheap.
It's a good example of how good writing kind of trumps everything, right? Like there's certain people that feel like, oh, comedy can't really be insightful because it's like a lower form of, you know,
watched Comedy Central, huh?
But how many comedies win Best Picture at the Academy Awards? You've got to have the serious film in order to win, sort of thing. And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Whereas you can see in this, if you can watch this 17-minute short film and you don't have some sort of an emotional response, you are as dead inside as the clone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, this is a very sweet little short film that's I don't think they set out to do to change the world or anything, but yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about awards, and according to Wikipedia here, it's won 42 awards so far.
Yeah.
And it's been nominated as of January 14th, 2016, for the 2016 Academy Awards for Best Short Film Animated. So, And apparently it's gotten 100% on Rotten Tomatoes based on 5 reviews. So how many, you know, things get 100%?
Yeah. Yes. We should go out and review it. Get added a couple more.
But, there you go.
Yeah. It's,
Well, let's just we've had more to talk about this than maybe we had when we did The Postman.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, well, let's just put it this way. It's easier anyway, but...
Well, do we have any other tech to cover? I think we covered pretty much everything.
There is no tech in... Well, there is some tech in here. There's the boxes and cloning, but it's not like...
Yeah, we talked about teleportation and the time travel and everything.
And then robots, and so, you know.
So if you had to pick out one thing, what would you take, Julie?
I'll take one of the robots on the moon that's trying to catch up with the sun and writing bad poetry.
I was going to say that too, but like, did they ever really say what those robots were for or what they did other than the fact that they just kind of drove around in the sunlight?
I know. I really need to watch this like 3 more times. Yeah. There's so much in it that, you know, there's brief mentions here, brief mentions there, and by the time you get done, it's like, God, there was like 25 things, and I can't keep them all straight.
Yeah. What about you, Mike?
I don't know. There's days when I have a lot of stuff to do. Cloning would be kind of nice if I had several versions of me. So, you know, one of us would always be able to sleep, rest, and the other could go out and work and then just switch off so that, you know, you work you have 5 clones, so everybody works one day a week, and then you have, like, you know, 6 days off to do something. So I don't know. It's an interesting idea.
I was going to say a fuel pump, because then I could say, well, that's a fuel pump that I know about. But I think I would take Mike's route and have a clone. I think that would be neat.
Nice.
So that wraps up this episode of Sci-Fi Tech Talk. You can check us out at scifitechtalk.com, where there's cool space junk available for purchase. Pop into the forums there and take part in the conversation, or follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Tech Talk. If you have any ideas or comments, please send them to greetings@scifitechtalk.com, and reviews on iTunes are always welcome. Julie, where can people find you?
I can be found on Twitter at Julie Keel, JulieKuehl, and links to the other blogs, podcasts, and whatever else I've got going on can be found at about.me/JulieKuehl.
All right, and Mike, where can people find you?
Yeah, I can be found on Twitter at DSC Chipman, and I have my about.me page at about.me/MikeMcPeak. That's MCPEEK.
Okay, and people can follow me on Twitter at BroncoSire. And let's see, next week we'll be covering the movie Ex Machina, and I have the IMDb blurb here. A young programmer is selected to participate in a groundbreaking experiment in a synthetic intelligence, in synthetic intelligence by evaluating the human qualities of a breathtaking humanoid AI. Mm-hmm. And that's it for this show, and we'll see you in the future. It's the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.